For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter and some cliched greeting involving leprechauns to viewers in Ireland who've made it number 10 on our all-time list of views by jurisdiction. But hey, at least I didn't try to say top of the morning or worse, diddly-dee potatoes. Nor will I try to say, oh dear, that dreadful Donald Trump, end quote. Unlike the usual suspects, such as the New York Times, which emails us that, quote, Trump's war on climate is thumping Detroit, end quote. Wow, his war on climate, that's so evil that is merely destroying Detroit almost seems beside the point. But we nevertheless ask, what really hammered American car companies? Was it a president who cut back on subsidies for products customers didn't want? Or was it CEOs steering billions of dollars into worthless investments in products that customers didn't want, based on political and activist hype? Next, speaking of climate deniers, a headline in MSN told us of, quote, the multi-million dollar race to shade the sun and stop climate change, end quote. Now, the actual story admits that geoengineering has a potential downside, which is a topic worth exploring at length, as we have done and will again. But here, we want to focus on that naive, comically ill-informed, stop climate change. See, far too many people involved with this issue, including journal activists, really don't know that the climate has always changed. And it's not an innocent misunderstanding for all kinds of reasons, including that they swallow unchewed claims that recent temperature changes were unprecedented in speed, magnitude, or both, that are plainly untrue. For instance, in the longest credible series we have of thermometer readings, which is for central England, there was about 2 degrees Celsius of warming in just 40 years between 1695 and 1735, while Matthew Willicke notes that at a number of points during the Holocene, the Greenland temperature rose or fell at least as fast as today, according to ice core records. Even more cosmically, the notion that the temperature and weather were essentially stable for thousands of years until we started spewing CO2, which we must observe that humans did not start doing in 1695, and is an idiotic claim that Al Gore made in An Inconvenient Truth, does make it superficially plausible to believe that we know what temperature the planet should be. And that unexamined assumption lets alarmists off the hook for the question of not just what it should be, but how do they know it? And here, I want to cite that specific quotation from Al Gore because it's mind-bogglingly ignorant. Quote, the places where people live were chosen because of the climate pattern that has been pretty much the same on Earth since the end of the last ice age 11,000 years ago, end quote. So, he denies obvious, well-established, widely known constant changes in climate, and so do many journalists and activists. Now, as we frequently have occasion to remark, it's not a lie, it's not a part of some cunning plan to get rich, take over the planet, or both. Al Gore really didn't know, and possibly he still doesn't. But the reason he got away with it, for better or worse, is that others covering the issue, yelling about it, and throwing soup at paintings over it, also don't know it. And they should. Then in the newsletter we say, here comes the non-carbon heat, because Zeke Housefather posts that, quote, I'd note that we are currently in modest La Nina conditions and expect an El Nino that kicks in later in the year to mostly warm 2027, end quote. Which we like for several reasons. First, it's a prediction that we can test without living to be 137. And second, it says if there are warmer conditions the next few years, the cause is very long-standing ocean current cycles, not carbon pollution. Unfortunately, we have a prediction of our own as well here. If there is some warming in the coming 2 years, most alarmists will not say, don't worry, it's just El Nino. But we do expect Housefather to, and we'll keep an eye out for it. Then we note in the newsletter that after an attempt to go sane by focusing on factory farms and the alarming quantities of manure that they generate and then dispose of in an unclear manner, Inside Climate News suddenly hollers, quote, as global warming accelerates, about 480 million people in North Africa and the Arabian Peninsula face intensifying and in some places unsurvivable heat, as well as drought, famine, and the risk of mass displacement, the World Meteorological Organization warned Thursday, end quote. Okay. At least, it is a prediction, if you know what unsurvivable means, and if you admit that, if they survive anyway, that claim was wrong. Then we say, don't shout, bad dog, when the Ottawa Citizen reports that, quote, dog chewing on battery-powered hand warmer blamed for Orleans house fire, end quote, in which, fortunately, neither people nor pets were harmed. Instead, shout, bad activist, because yes, of course, it was a lithium-ion battery, the kind that climate zealots want to deploy in vast arrays and make us all dependent on and hope that nothing starts a fire in which both economies and people are devastated. And another thing. As Matthew Willicke observes, there's something a bit perverse in documenting a dramatic decrease in cloud cover over Europe over 40 years, which the EU's Copernicus Climate Change Service has done, and then conclude that the detected warming that followed the big hot yellow thing in the sky landing more of its hot rays on the place was definitely not caused by it. No, of course, correlation is not causation, and climate is complicated. But to deny the obvious in this regard suggests an attachment to the CO2 paradigm that's more dogmatic than empirical. And that's how scientific theories die, not how they prosper, even if they do get all the money. And yet another thing. Climate alarmists might not get a big laugh out of that old Soviet joke about what to do if the nuclear attack sirens sound. The answer was, wrap yourself in a winding sheet and walk slowly to the cemetery, and to the subsequent, why slowly, the answer was to avoid causing panic. But it is true that many former global warming sirens are now sauntering away from their previous positions, lest sprinting should give rise to anxiety or even recriminations. But other hardier souls hold their ground, insisting that they were right all along and the only problem was messaging they made apocalypse sound bad. Terence Corcoran in the Financial Post writes, quote, as the world spins into what appears to be a new global order, one of the dominant movements of the past half century has been pushed to the sidelines. Once billed as a threat that could destroy much of life on Earth, climate change driven by human consumption of fossil fuels has moved to the back burner of national and global policymaking, end quote. And then he cites a Telegraph piece by, quote, noted environmental academic Christian Dunn, end quote, of Bangor University in Wales in the UK, who admits that, quote, a harder truth is that those of us who work on environmental issues have helped to create the problem ourselves, end quote. How? By promoting theories that turned out to be costly and untrue, even hysterical? No, Dunn says languidly, by telling people how bad the apocalypse was going to be and causing them to panic. Here's someone else who's not giving up. Elizabeth May, apparently president for life of Canada's feebly flickering Green Party, hollers, quote, kowtowing to the billionaire class and transnational corporations has never built a strong nation or healthy communities, end quote. Whoa, it's 1968 out there, man. Or, in these woke times, person. Of course, the actual Prime Minister of Canada was just in Beijing kowtowing to a very different class, but Ms. May apparently has it all worked out. Quote, we know how to fight climate change, so let's actually do it. Governments need to take the hard decisions, end quote. Amazing. It's that simple. Or she is. In the newsletter, we also continue our deep dive into last summer's contrarian U.S. Department of Energy climate report by looking at Chapter 5.3, which concerns the layer of the atmosphere between about 1 kilometer and 16 kilometers up, called the troposphere. Climate models say that the warming there, at least over the tropics, and yes, I'm sorry, but it's true, there's a tropical troposphere and a non-tropical troposphere, and we're talking about the tropical troposphere here. Climate modelers say the warming there will be strongly amplified by this famous water vapor feedback mechanism. Now, we did a video on this topic a few years ago because it's one of those problems that climate modelers and other insiders are actually privately very aware of, but in public they go shtum. So the problem here isn't uncertainty. It's deliberate model bias. And on this, the DOE group shows the receipts. The report authors present an updated version of results in a paper by John Christie and Ross McKittrick back in 2020, which showed trends in model reproductions of tropospheric temperature versus observed data since 1979, which is when proper satellite data became available. Here in this chart, the models are in red and the observations are in blue. Each dot represents the trend in degrees Celsius per decade since 1979, either observed or theorized. Now, the reason there are three blue dots is that there are three observational systems. There's satellite data, balloon data, and reanalysis from weather forecasting models. And there's a horde of red dots because there are 39 climate models. And also, We love charts. There are four boxes because the top row shows the mid-troposphere and the bottom row the lower troposphere, while the left column shows the entire planet and the right just the tropics, which again is where the models say that the warming should be strongest. So, what do the models with too much warming have in common? You guessed it. They assume very high equilibrium climate sensitivity, or ECS. That's the absolute increase in temperature that's supposedly caused by a relative doubling of atmospheric CO2. So obviously, the models that get the warming more accurate have lower ECS. And of course, those models also project very little warming over the coming century. But if ECS is low, it pretty much blows the core out of global warming alarmism. And it gets worse, because the DOE report notes that the IPCC recognizes this problem, that the models systematically overpredict warming, but, drumroll please, it buries it in the back of its assessments. And it gets even worse, because this problem hasn't just been known for decades, it's become more serious with every generation of models, exactly as though their creators considered it a feature, not a bug. A new post by Dr. Roy Spencer at his blog calls it the ongoing, quote, epic climate model failure, end quote. But really, it's an epic failure of science, a failure to correct itself, and a failure of groups like the IPCC to explain to readers what's been going on, even though they know about it. Oh, and speaking of climate change as a religion-like object, it's an article of faith among alarmists that the weather is getting worse. Spectacularly worse, in fact. They chant it regularly as a ritual observance, as a premise, not a conclusion, and in the process, they deny data. As when Bloomberg Green says, quote, home insurance is essential for recovering after disaster hits. But as an increasing number of homeowners are finding out, payouts may not be enough to rebuild. Today's newsletter looks at what can be done to help bridge the growing gap at a time when extreme weather is worsening, end quote. Now, we've dealt with the insurance issue elsewhere, and we will again. But here I want to focus on this dogma that extreme weather is worsening, driven by surging temperatures. Because numbers coming in for 2025 show that temperatures were high, but not as high as 2024. Landfalling hurricanes were strictly average and gave no sign of a trend upwards. And weather disasters worldwide likewise refuse to trend up, even heat waves. So, it's time for the climate movement to declare a credibility emergency. And finally, from the CO2science.org archive, yum yum, Zingiber officinale is officially ginger, which almost everyone knows is either a powder or this weird sprawling root that wouldn't be out of place in a dark ritual. But the actual plant, whose appearance may be less familiar, was apparently native to Asia and can be adapted to grow almost anywhere, especially indoors if you live somewhere chilly, because ginger likes heat. And it likes CO2. In 2011, two experiments showed an additional 300 parts per million in the atmosphere caused ginger plants to grow an extra 46.5%. So, fire up the wok or get out a gingerbread recipe, because it's not going anywhere except from farm to pantry. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, waging a war on foolish hyperbole.